So we are holding on Kufkof Bays, Amud Bays, second line from the bottom. We started learning in the Mishnah about the chur getting a double portion, which we mentioned that the chur gets a double portion only from the father's mechasim, but not from the mother's. So, what is the definition of the double portion? Tanur Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, when it says losses like pishnayim, to give him a double portion, it means pishnayim ka'echad. It means double as much as any other individual brother gets. So, for example, the Rashbam says you have five brothers, let's say, you divide the inheritance into six portions, the Bechor gets two of those, and everybody else gets one each.
What
else
is it?
We're going to see. So you're saying that that's what it means, twice as much as any individual. Maybe that's not what it means. Maybe it actually means two-thirds of all the Nechasim. Maybe it means, in other words, that you split the Nechasim into three parts. Two of them the Bechor gets, and one of them the rest of the brothers divide. So if there's only one brother, then it would be the same way either way. But if there's two or more brothers, it comes out the Bechor is getting a larger portion the second way than the first way.
So that's two-thirds comes up.
But you could argue though that Pishnayim maybe means two portions out of three. In fact, you have a pasuk. There's a pasuk actually in the Chari, in one of the Treyasa, that says that the pishnayim yikorsuva vashlishis yivaser. So you see over there that
pishnayim
vashlish is fine, but the point is that you see that pishnayim could conceivably mean two-thirds.
What is that?
It's in Chari. Yeah. So that's in Chari. The simple meaning of it is that two-thirds of the of people will be yikorsuva.
Two can
be
two-thirds or
two can
be
yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So after Omer Pishnayim Ka'achoda, and El Pishnayim B'chol Nechasim, maybe mean two-thirds out of all the Nechasim, you can answer like this. Before you even get into a limud, I can tell you, V'dinhu, I can tell you, you learn it in a very straightforward way. Chalkeim Echad V'chalkeim Chamisha. You can have a situation where B'chor divides with only one brother, and you can have a scenario where he divides with five other brothers. We're going to try to learn it from logic, but we can't, so we're going to end up learning it from circle. But first, we're going to start with logic. You have a situation where you have a Bechor, and then you have one other regular brother. And then you have a situation where you have a Bechor, and you have five other regular brothers. Just like when he's dividing with only one brother, he's getting twice as much as him. The other brother gets one-third, he gets two-thirds. Logically, then, the same thing should be when he's dividing with five brothers, that it should also tell her that he's getting twice as much as any of them, not as all of them put together. He's getting two, and then there are, and each one of the others.
What do we know about this first one out of three?
We're arguing that we know. There's no question if there's one regular brother that he gets two-thirds of the Nechasim, according to either way you look at it. Whether you say that Pishnayim means double as much as anybody else, or whether you say it means two-thirds of the Nechasim, either way he's getting twice as much as his brother. Well, by that logic, we should analogize to that, if he has five brothers, that he's also getting twice as much as any one individual of them, not twice as much as all five of them collectively.
Right.
Okay, the question is, fine, but you could also look at it the other way around. The chelkeim echad, the chelkeim hey, fine, I can also draw an analogy between dividing with one brother and dividing with five. Ma chelkeim echad pishnayim b'chol nechassim, when he's dividing with only one other brother, he gets two-thirds of all the nechassim. In other words, don't look at it as, obviously, you can have, there's one b'chor and one pasha, sure. Yaakov and Esav, for example. By definition, he gets two-thirds then, right? But in other words, the first argument, the argument was that we're gonna draw an analogy. We're gonna say, look how much he's getting compared to the other brother in the one scenario, and draw by analogy to that same way. Regardless how many brothers, his proportion is going to be twice as much as any individual brother. But now we're saying maybe not. Maybe look at it from the point of view of the percentage of the whole estate. In the case when there's one brother, he's getting two-thirds of the whole estate. Maybe then if he's dividing with five brothers, he gets two-thirds of the entire estate. Why are you saying, look at it from the point of view of what his percentage is compared to each other brother, compare what his percentage is from the whole estate? So we can't prove it by logic. Therefore, we need a pasuk. Talmud Loimer, therefore the pasuk says, V'hoya v'yom hanchila yasbonov. Therefore the pasuk says, on the day when the father bequeaths to his children, So the pasuk says that he's not allowed to prevent the bechor from getting his double portion. The point is that Rashbam says that whole pasuk is unnecessary for the simple pshat, because the next pasuk says that the bechor, he has to give a double portion. So why does the pasuk have to say on the day when he bequeaths to his son, he's not allowed to favor another son over the bechor? That whole pasuk is extra. Evidently, the point of that pasuk is, the pasuk wants to tell us the when he bequeaths to his children. So the point is that Torah ribs the nachla etzel achin. The Torah is giving us an extra pasuk to tell us that the other brothers get an increased amount of the nechassim. So the Rashbam explains it just means, in other words, the Torah is telling us that the brothers have to get a decent share of the Nachla, not that they're only going to get one-third. Rabbeinu Gershom puts it a little differently. Rabbeinu Gershom says the fact that when we say HaTorah rips the Nachla etzel achin means the Torah wants that the majority of the Nachla should be by the other brothers. Now, two-thirds always goes to the Bechor, means the minority is always going to be by the other brothers. So, okay, if there's only one other brother of necessity, the Bechor gets the majority of it. That can't be helped. If there's two other brothers, fine, he gets exactly half. But at least whenever possible, when there are three or more pshutim, three or more non-Bechorim, then the Torah wants that by saying these extra words, the implication is that as much as possible of the Nachla should go to the other brothers. So obviously you can't explain it according to the last way, that the Bechor always gets two-thirds, because that would contradict the implication of that topic. Of necessity, it means the first way, that the Bechor gets double as much as a regular brother.
Why do you exclude the two-thirds?
Because two-thirds would mean that the other brothers are going to have less. So according to Rabbeinu Gershom, that a Torah reaps the Nachla means the Torah wants them to have the majority. Obviously, it contradicts that. But even according to the Rashbam's explanation, that the Torah is just giving us an extra pasuk to tell us that the brothers are supposed to get a decent portion, fine. But if you get two-thirds, they're not getting a decent portion. And further, we have other psukim that prove this point also. Of course, as usual, the Gemara is going to ask soon why we need all those extra psukim. Once you have one pasuk, that should be enough. But yeah. So, v'omer, then you have a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim that says like, Uvnei Reuven b'chol Yisrael, the children of the descendants of Reuven, who is the firstborn of Yisrael, of Yaakov. Now, why is he the firstborn? Ki hu ha-bechor. He is, in fact, the bechor. He was born first. However, when he desecrated his father's bed, the famous thing that the Gemara tells us on Shabbos, Rashi mentions it on the Pasuk, that he slept with Bila. The Gemara tells us on Shabbos, it doesn't mean literally he had relations with her. It means he moved Yaakov's bed. He interfered with Yaakov's marital life.
And that was considered.
That's considered like he slept with Bila, yeah. Because bedakos, it means bedakos. What's the problem of a son sleeping with his father's wife? It's like he's saying, you know, she doesn't belong to you; she belongs to me. Like I'm taking over here.
Bedakos,
by moving the bed and saying I'm the one who decides where you sleep and who your primary wife is. That it shouldn't be Mela, it was Rachel, but it shouldn't be Bila. That bedakos says, yeah, like I don't want to find her wife. Bila was but she was kind of a secondary wife. So Reuven took the view, Mela, while Rachel was alive, that Yaakov should be primarily with her. Fine, he wanted to marry her first, as we're going to say later in the Gemara. But after she died, that Bilha, who was originally her shivcha, should be the primary wife and not my mother Leah. No, so he moved the bed. But that was wrong of him because it's not his business to interfere. Anyway, so v'chalalo yitzuayov, the pasuk says, so when he desecrated his father's bed,
where did he put it? In another
room? He put it in Leah's tent. Nitna b'chorot el b'nei Yosef in Israel. His b'chorot was given to the children of Yosef, the son of Yaakov. V'loy lehitziaches l'b'chorot, however, not as far as being counted in Yichus as the b'chorot. Reuben, in other words, when the Torah lists the Shvatim, Reuben is still called the b'chorot, like in this week's parsha, in the enumeration and in the census of b'nei Yisrael, but they were still called b'nei Reuben b'chor Yisrael. Similarly, in Parshas Pinchas, by the second census, and in other places, Reuben is always called the Bechor. So as far as being called the Bechor, Reuben is still called that. But as far as the actual Bechorah, as the double portion, as we're going to see, was given to Yosef. That's the Pasuk says. So what do we learn from that? Nemar b'chorda l'Yosef and nemar b'chorda l'Dodos. So we have the pasuk is telling us that the b'chorda was given to Yosef, and the pasuk is also telling us that b'chorda, that there's a concept of the pasuk in Parshas Kisese, tells us that b'chorda applies across all the generations. Every time a person dies and leaves the b'chorda gets a double portion. Wait. Ma b'chorda hamur l'Yosef b'shnayim ke'achad. So just like when it comes to Yosef, when we say the b'chorda was given to Yosef, nitna b'chorot l'vnei Yosef, it doesn't mean that Yosef got two-thirds of Eretz Yisrael. It means that they got a double portion, as in they got a portion for Ephraim and a portion for Menasheh. Ach b'chorda hamur l'geres b'shnayim ke'achad. Thus, you can also prove that when the Torah says in all generations that a person dies and leaves behind an estate, that a double portion goes to the b'chor, it means the same kind of thing. Not a double portion, two-thirds, but a double portion, as in twice as much as any of the individual, as any of the individual other heirs.
Is that the reason why Ephraim and Menashe were, you know, their retro office, both, there too?
Yep.
That's the reason.
Yep. Okay. V'oimer. And we have I skipped a line over here, actually, sorry. And the next pasuk there in Divrei Hayamim continues, Ki Yehuda gavah be'achav, because Yehuda was the most powerful among his brothers, all the nugget mimenu, and therefore the kings come from Yehuda, v'ha-b'chorah le'yosef, but the b'chorah goes to Yosef. So again, nemar b'chorah le'yosef, so that's the point. Nemar b'chorah le'yosef, so it says the b'chorah was given to Yosef. It says b'chorah has to be done throughout the generation. Ma b'chorah hamur l'Yosef pishnayim ke'echad. Just like when it comes to Yosef, the word b'chorah means you get the double portion, Ephraim and Manasseh. Ach b'chorah hamur l'dorot pishnayim ke'echad. The same thing in future generations. It means twice as much as any individual other heir, but not two-thirds of the estate. And then you have another pasuk that proves this point again. We're going to explain soon why we need all these pasukim. So va'omer, and you have a pasuk that Yaakov himself says to Yosef, "Vani nasati l'cha shchem achad alachecha." I behold, I have given you one portion more than your brothers. The word shchem has a double meaning. Actually, it means the city of Shchem, but in a number of places in Tanakh, the word shchem means a portion. Rashi mentions on the pasuk over there that that's what it means over here. That, for example, you have a pasuk in Tilim, Kisi Shusem, Shechem. You have a number of places in Tanakh where the word shchem means a portion. So Vanina, Shchem Echad, yeah, so that's right, so, right, exactly. So I have given you one extra portion over your brothers. So therefore, again, we see that, in other words, that Yosef's extra portion doesn't consist of two-thirds of Eretz Yisrael. It consists of an extra portion, in other words, a portion equal to one of the other Shvatim. And Yaakov continues, Ashalakhti Miyadha Emori Bakharbi or Bakashti, which this portion I took from the hand of the Emori with my sword and with my bow. So before we get into explaining why we need all the psukim, we're gonna digress a second and ask, what do you mean? Did Yaakov really conquer this area with his sword and his bow? What? Okay, wait. But you have a pasuk in Tehillim where David HaMelech says, "Ki lo b'kashti emta, I don't trust in my bow, v'chabi lo yisashieni, and my sword won't save me." In other words, even David HaMelech, who fought wars his whole life, is saying, "I don't depend on my weapons, I depend on the help of the Eibishter." How much more so Yaakov, who's not the most of the time, he's an Ishtam Yoshev Olam. He's not usually a man of war, or even if his children are going to war, whatever. The primary thing is not his weapons. Why is he making a point of mentioning that I took this from the hand of the Emori with my sword and my bow? No, rather, when he says my sword means my tefillah, and the word kashti, my bow, zubakosha, this means my pleas to the Eibishter. In other words, that I got this area in the course of my tefillah. So then, if we're talking about it, the area that Shimon and Levi conquered, they took by force, but they were successful only because Yaakov's tefillah. Yaakov disapproved of them doing the way they did, but still, it's true. Nevertheless, though, if you've spoken earlier, when it says "Vayavoyer ala ir betach," and it says they came to the city very confidently, Rashi says over there that the token, the kosher shalzokin, they're very confident because they know they have the power of tefillah of their old man of their old father Yaakov. So
what does that mean? Old?
Because he was old, but also Zaken means Tam Chacham, whatever. The point is, therefore, that what we mean is that Yaakov is explaining that I got this in the course of my tefillahs. Which, by the way, Rashi over there on the pasuk says it doesn't necessarily mean that we're talking about conquering it from the Knaan. It is true that the Midrashim talk about how, besides the battle in Shechem, you also had afterwards the various Canaanite nations came to fight against Yaakov and his family, and they were able to fight them off. But Rashi over there mentioned a different explanation anyway. The Amori over here is actually Esau. Now, Esau is not from the nation of the Amori, but he acted like an Amori. He acted like a goy. Therefore, Yaakov was from the Amori, one of the seven nations of Canaan. So, but Esau is not descended from them. He's descended from Abraham and Yitzchak. But Yaakov is saying that I was zoicha to have Eretz Yisrael, and that Esav shouldn't have it in the course of my tefillah. And in fact, Marsha expands on that a little bit here. He says, why is he after mentioning a sword and a bow? Because we know from the Pesukim, Yishmael's special weapon was a bow, right? He roiv a kashos, he was an expert archer. Esav's special weapon was a sword, achav achatechia. So Yaakov is saying that I accomplished with my tefillahs to be able to override Yishmael's and Esav's potential claims to Eretz Yisrael, and that the Eretz to promise it to me instead.
Is it a remnant to take from the Amori,
Maybe. I mean, here we're talking about Eretz Yisrael proper. There we're talking, and then specifically the area that went to Ephraim and Manasseh. There we're talking about what's going to be lost in love. We're going to see on Amud Beis, actually, there's a separate thing that only the descendants of Yosef are able to fully conquer Esav. We'll see on Amud Beis, right? Okay. Anyway. Why it is, by the way, that tefillah is compared to a sword and a bow, there's a lot of different explanations, including one interesting one. I think Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that when the pasuk says b'chari uvakashti, the word uvakashti can be repunctuated as uvakashasu, and my plea. So therefore we see that there's an actual relationship over there. Yeah. So they talk about a lot. They talk about a lot of different angles on it. There's in Hasidus, in a number of places, in Torah Or, and many other places, in Hasidus. Yeah, it talks about the idea that a sword killed close up, a bow killed from a distance, and also a bow, its effectiveness depends on how hard you pull it back. One idea is that many of the Mephoshim talk about is the idea that your tefillah is going to be more effective the more you pull inward, the more you actually feel it. But besides that, Siddhartha talks about the idea, a sword represents the idea of davening and therefore fighting off the negativity, the klippos and whatever that you actually know are present over there, fighting off your nefesh bahamas, shastrova, as the famous expression goes from the Zohar, that the time of davening is a time of war against the nefesh bahamas. So the cherev is what you use for one-on-one fighting against the nefesh of Bahamas that you know you have. The keshes, the bow, is more for fighting off the aspects of the nefesh of Bahamas that are surrounding you that you may not even know are there, the unknown enemies, like, so you get them at a distance with that power of Philip.
Who did we conquer with a bow?
I mean, when they fought in Eretz Yisrael, they fought with weapons, but here we're saying... He took a slingshot. Okay, yeah, I mean, you have in different places. Tanakh mentioned that they had at various times in history that expert bowmen in the Jewish armies. Yeah, okay. Anyway, okay, so the bottom line is then, again, so the Braita had quoted us a number of psukim to establish the idea that Bechora means that the Bechora gets twice as much as any individual son rather than he gets two-thirds of the Nechassim. So, the usual question, Maiva Omer, why do we need all these extra psukim? Like this, v'chitzeh, because you might say the first pasuk that you quoted, v'hoyah b'yom hanchilo yasbono, which we were saying that's an extra pasuk, and therefore we have it available to teach us the din that the other brothers are supposed to be getting a decent portion. Not necessarily. V'chitzeh, you might argue, hay l'chid Rav Yechon ben Breiko da'asa. Maybe that pasuk is coming to teach us Rav Yechon ben Breiko's din, which we touched on yesterday, that he says that if you have a bunch of children, and you say, I want to bequeath my whole inheritance to one of them, and the other ones don't get. Rabbi Yechon ben Breiko says that such a thing is valid.
That's what
we learn that from that pasuk. He learns that from that pasuk.
What?
That if a person has, let's say, five sons, and he says, "I want only one of them to yarshin me. I don't want the other ones to yarshin me." Rabbi Yechon ben Breiko says such a thing works, and he learns that from this pasuk. That he has the ability to decide among his children who's going to be the one he's manchil, the one that he bequeaths to. We'll see. We'll get to it. But the point is that the point is, Rabbi Yechon ben Breiko would say you use the pasuk for that. So you don't have it available to teach us that a bechor gets what the din is as far as the other brothers getting a decent sized portion. So tashma, therefore you bring the second pasuk from Divrei Hayamim of Nei Reuven bechor Yisrael, which mentions that the bechorah went to Yosef. v'chitema, but you still might argue b'chorda mitcherosei legaminan. Still, though, maybe we can't learn the word b'chorda. Maybe you can't learn the word b'chorda from the word b'chorosei. And the Rayam uses the word b'chorosei in Kiseise. It says b'chorda. It's not exactly the same word. Now, the Rashbam points out, I mean, this isn't a real Gzeirah Shavah anyway. You can't make Gzeirah Shavah from Torah to Nach. This is more Gilui Milsa Ba'alma. This is more where the Torah tells us that you have to give a Chelek Bechorah to the Bechorah, but it doesn't specify what Pishnayim means, and we have to therefore derive it from the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. Still, you might argue that maybe the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim is saying that was a special case. Bechorah Tzoy, it was a one-time thing that Yosef got an extra portion like that. Maybe in general, Bechorah works differently. Tashma, that is why we brought the next pasuk in Divrei Hayomim about Bechorah LeYosef, where it actually uses the word Bechorah, generically. B'chitema, so you still might argue, Yosef Gufe, Mimai de Pishnayim Kechad Hava. So you might argue, okay, well, Taka, how do you know that Yosef's extra portion consisted of a portion equivalent to one of the other brothers? Tashma, therefore, we bring the last pasuk, Banina Satel Hoshchem Achad Alachecha, that I've given you an extra portion over your brothers. Which still, overlay the Papa Abaya, so the Papa asked Abaya, who says the extra portion is one whole extra portion corresponding to the portion of any one whole shevet. Ema Dikla Ba'alma, maybe all it means is he gave him a little extra portion, like maybe the area of one tree or something. Which, now, the Rashbam says, the Gemara could have asked the other way around. Maybe Taka means that he gave Yosef two-thirds of Eretz Yisrael. Rapapa's not asking that because it was very obvious that Yosef didn't have two-thirds of Eretz Yisrael. We learned the other day, B'nai Yosef came to Yoshua to complain, we don't have enough land. If they had two-thirds of Eretz Yisrael, they got nothing to complain about. So therefore the question is the other way around. Maybe the extra portion that is given to Yosef was not a whole nother portion for a shevet. Maybe it's just an extra area for one tree or something, just symbolically, that he's symbolically the Bechor. Amalei, so Abaya answers, Amalacha, Amakra, to answer you is what the pasuk says. Ephraim and Menashe, Yaakov says, Ephraim and Menashe, Kiruven, Veshim, and Yuli. Ephraim and Menashe are going to be just like Reuven and Shimon to me. They're going to be two co-equal shvatim to all the other ones. We learned yesterday, L'shvatim Nischalka, that Eretz Yisrael, L'shvatim Iflug. We said that Eretz Yisrael was divided up based on shvatim, especially according to the Rashbam's and the Ramban's explanation that each shevet got an equal size portion. Well then, what it means is Ephraim is going to get their own equal size portion, 1/12 of Eretz Yisrael. Menashe is going to get 1/12, just like Reuben and Shimon, respectively, each got 1/12. So therefore we see that it really is that Pishnayim means two portions, twice as much as any one of the other brothers, but not 2/3 of the whole thing. And on the other hand, not just the extra area of one palm tree. Incidentally, by the way, because those are the common kind of trees in Babel. Yeah, okay. By the way, Bala Turim points out on that pasuk over there, there's another meaning in Ephraim and Menashe, Reuven, Veshim, and Yuli. The gematria of Ephraim and Menashe is the same as the gematria of Reuven, Veshim, with a difference of one. Because you can always have, in gematrios, you're always allowed to have a difference of one, imakolo. You have the one representing the totality of the thing. So therefore, that's the end. Okay. All right. Since we're talking about that the Bechorah was taken away from Reuven and given to Yosef. The fact that the double portion is given to one of the Shvatim, by rights that should have gone to Reuven, instead it goes to Yosef. So, Bamine Reb Chelbim and Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni, Mara Yaakov Shenot HaBechorah MeReuven VeNasna LeYosef. What taka did Yaakov see? What made him decide to take away the Bechorah from Reuven and give it to Yosef? So the Gemara interjects, what do you mean, Ma'ra? What do you mean? What was the reason? We just said, Chalalei Yisroei Yosef. We just said, when Reuven desecrated his father's bed, when he moved his father's bed. Ella, no. The question is, Ma'ra Shenasna LeYosef. The question is, why Gavka of all the Shvatim did he give to Yosef? The Iyun Yaakov, by the way, says an interesting word on this. He says like this, if we were to understand Reuven's Avera in the simple sense that he actually was Mizana with Bila, then fine, you could understand. He fell in that, whereas Yosef succeeded in such a nisayon with Potiphar's wife, therefore he deserved it. But Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni himself is the one who tells us in the Sefer Shabbos that Reuven didn't actually sin with Bila; he only moved Yaakov's bed. See, back to the question: why Yosef specifically? That's right. Yeah, you're jumping ahead, but yeah. Okay.
But it should be
a right
from one shevet, but not Yosef.
Okay. So he answers him like. We knew it had to be taken away from Reuven because Machal lo Yisroel. But the question is why specifically?
But here's the thing.
Why specifically being given
to Nefesh for giving?
Yeah. We're going to talk. We're gonna get to that. Yeah.
So she gets everything from Leah, extra from Leah. And he took it to her before, so he really deserves everything.
Yeah, we're gonna get to that in a few lines. Yep. Yeah. Okay. But first,
we skip it now. No,
we don't. No. Let me give you a mashal what this is comparable to. Imagine you have a balabas who raised an orphan in his house. Eventually that orphan becomes rich. So he says to himself, let me benefit him out of my nechosim to make up for what he did for me all these. So the same way, the Yosef in this mashal is Yaakov, who Yosef provided for him the last 17 years of his life in Mitzrayim, by Chi Yaakov at the time, Shvayat Veshana, and Yosef provided for the whole family. So therefore, when Yaakov has an opportunity, now he's like a Yosef who suddenly became rich. He all of a sudden has a Bechorah available because he's not going to be going to Reuben. So therefore, he gives it to Yosef out of gratitude. But Reb Chelbe says, so what are you telling me? And if Reuben hadn't sinned, then Yaakov's not going to be able to pay off Yosef, in any way. As a matter of fact, actually, the Rashbam adds that we find what Yaakov didn't just give Yosef what he took away from Reuben. He gave Yosef of his own also. He gave him his own money. He gave him extra brachas. We have the brachas that he gave to Ephraim and Manasseh. We have Yosef's own bracha, the brachas to the 12 Shvatim is several psukim long, full of all kinds of brachas.
Exactly, the brothers were jealous.
They were jealous earlier. No, now they didn't have reason to be jealous anymore. Now they've gotten over that. But the point is, in other words, it's not the point. Yeah, that's one of the many explanations why Yosef put them through everything that he did in Parshas Miketz, is because he wanted to see if they're still going to be jealous. Yeah, he wanted to see if they're still going to be jealous of him or Binyamin or whatever. And he saw that actually they'd overcome that. They're willing to go on the Sirat Nefesh with Binyamin. Yeah. Okay. The point is, in other words, Reb Chelbe is asking, you're telling me that only because Reuben slipped up, therefore Yaakov has something available to give Yosef. He gave Yosef of his own anyway. You don't take away from one of the other brothers to give to the guy who did you a favor, in this case to Yosef, who supported him. You give him out of your own. Ella, no, Reb Chelbe tells him, Reb Yonasan, Rab Choloi Kachom. No, you should know your own Rebbe, Reb Yonasan. We find throughout Shas that Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni says in the name of Reb Yonasan, your own Rebbe, Reb Yonasan, loy kach omer. He did not say like that. Rather, he explained it like this. Like you said, Binyamin. Ru'uya hoisa b'chora lotus merachol. By rights, the b'chora should have come from Rachel. Because the Pasuk says, Ela told us Yaakov Yosef. As the Pasuk says, the following are the descendants of Yaakov, Yosef. So Yosef is Yaakov's primary son. Because by rights, Yaakov was planning to marry Rachel first. And had he married Rachel first, then Yosef, her firstborn, would have been Ella, but why did Leah come first? Shekidamta Leah Barachmim, because Leah got ahead of Rachel as far as Rachmim. She pleaded by the Eidishta so hard that she ended up, as we're going to see, the famous thing that she didn't want to marry Esav.
And would that have come about had Rachel not been raised in Nefesh? I understand there was a bit of a transaction going on.
The Dudayim is later anyway. The Dudayim is when Yisachar was being born. He's one of the younger Shlachim.
I understand that, but she roughly still really have Rachel in Hagosah until she got a Dudayim.
No. Okay.
So with her being Meister Nefesh, eventually maybe that was part of what kind of came back to that she was going to ship, unless she was going to have kids anyway.
She was anyway. I mean, I'll tell you, Rashi on the Sukkim mentions over there in particular that the Eivishter, when it says, Vayishma'el, Vayizkur, Lekimas Rachel, in particular, Rashi says over there, he remembered that Rachel had given the secret to Leah, as we're going to learn soon in the Gemara. The secret password that Yaakov had given her. Well, wait, we'll get to it in the Gemara soon. And also the fact that Eivishter kept in mind that if Rachel doesn't end up not having children, Yaakov may end up divorcing her and she's going to wind up with Esau.
Right.
So, and she herself was davening for that. But because, as our Gemara is saying, because Leah was davening harder for not to marry Esav than Rachel was, then therefore she ended up marrying Yaakov first, and therefore Reuben ended up being the firstborn, not Yosef. However, when we took tzniyus, shahoisa baba rachel, but because on the other hand, Rachel had a sense of tzniyus, also as we're going to see soon, hechzira kadosh baruch hu la, then the Eibishter returned to her the bechora. That after all, the bechora went to her eldest son Yosef.
There was not tzniyus.
No, not really. It wasn't chas v'shalom. But in other words, we're going to see soon, that there was a certain special, Rachel had the ability to keep a secret in a certain special way. We're going to see. Wait. Yeah, that's what we're going to explain in the next few lines. I'll tell you, by the way, there is a very interesting verse. I don't remember who it comes from. That said, we say in the Haggadah, Arami Ovid Ovi Vayered Mitzrayim. So what's the connection between Lavan cheating Yaakov and Vayered Mitzrayim? So one interesting explanation is based on all this. Okay, so our Gemara is telling us that Leah ended up marrying Yaakov first because Kidamta Berachmim, she davened harder for it. But on the surface at least, it was because the Gemara over here just said Kidamta Berachmim, that Leah davened harder than Rachel. But at least on the surface, the reason why he ended up marrying Leah first is because Lavan tricked him, right? As the Gemara itself is going to talk about soon. Now, what would happen if Lavan had not tricked Yaakov? He would have married Rachel first. Yosef would have been born first. Now, later on, if Yaakov is favoring Yosef, nobody would have had an objection to it. Okay, Yaakov's eldest, of course he's favoring him, he's the Bechor. Therefore, they would have never been jealous of him, and they never would have sold him to Mitzrayim. But Arami Oved Oved, because Lavan tried to mess around over there and got Leah in instead of... It was all part of the Eibishter's plan, fine, but still, eventually that led to Vayered Mitzrayim. Eventually it led to, because of that, they got jealous of Yosef and wound up selling him, and the whole thing developed from it. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. Okay. The Golas we're in now is not, Kol HaGolias Nekroes Hashem Mitzrayim. It is true that Mitzrayim is the source of all the Golas, and it's true, but still, the Golas we're in now is Golas Eden, not Golas Mitzrayim.
Okay. Yeah.
Instead of Gehenim, that is true. Okay, onward in the Gemara.
We would have gone there no matter how.
Okay.
Yeah,
my...
we have four Golas.
Okay.
It should be one Golas. He stuttered.
All right. Come on. No. Okay. My kidamta leya barach.
That's a good question.
Why there four
golos? We have four.
If there was one golos and it lasted all this long, we wouldn't have survived it. At least like this, we had a break between one and the next. Okay. My kidamta leya barach. What do we mean that Leah got ahead of Rachel as far as Rachel? Like this. Yeah, the pasuk says, V'enid Leah Rakos. It says Leah's eyes were soft or weak. Now, my Rakos, what do we mean weak? Ileman Rakos Mamish. Do we mean in the simple sense that Leah's eyes were actually weak? How could that be? Efshabignus Behemoth Smeya Lajibrakos. We find the Torah doesn't even want to speak negatively about a Behemoth Smeya. The Chiv, as the Pasuk says in Parashat Noach, Mina Behema HaTahora, or Mina Behema HaShor Einenu Tahora. The Pasuk uses extra letters and extra words to say an animal that is not Tahor, instead of just saying flat out, an animal that is Tomei. Bignus Tzadikim Dibrakos. How could it be? Then the Torah is going to tell us something negative about Leah, that she didn't look good, that she had weak eyes. Ela Omer Rav Elazar, Shemakne Seha Aruchos. No, so rather Rav Elazar explains what it means is, her matonos, her presence, are long. Meaning, in other words, who ended up descending from Leah? Two of the Shvatim descending from Leah are Levi and Yehuda. Levi had the Kohenim and Levim. Yehuda had the kings. And all of those are long-lasting. Those are all. They run throughout Jewish history. As opposed to Rachel had kings come from her. She had Shaul. She had Joseph himself was a king. But those were only temporary things. So Leah's matones were aruchos. They were much longer. And so we're darshin rakos as related to the word aruchos. Marsha actually explains a little differently because it's interesting actually. The Evan Ezra on Pasuk mentions an explanation from somebody called Ben Ephraim that says something similar, that Rakos means Aruchos. And the Evan Ezra, as he often does, has a sharp line on that. He says on this Ben Ephraim, Behu Hayachoser Alf. He was missing an aleph. He says that this Ben Ephraim says the word Rakos is missing an aleph. It should have been Aruchos. So Evan Ezra says on him, he was missing an aleph, meaning he's not Ben Ephraim, he's Ben Purim. Anyway, but Marsha mentions that briefly over here, but still, it is a fair question. How does Rakos come to mean Aruchos? So therefore, Marsha actually explains, based on at the beginning of our Masechta, we have the expression Lo Richa, where Richa means a king. So Matnesea Aruchos means she had kingly, she had important gifts. again, the gifts of Kahuna and Leviya and Malchus. So Rachos can be Meloshin kingship.
From which passage?
Lo Richa v'lo Bar Richa. That expression in the Gemara at the beginning of Amos Esther. In Aramaic, Richa means a king. Maybe it's related to the word Rex in Latin. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Because we do. We do that a lot of times. We do that a lot of times. We darshan.
No,
yeah, but we darshan. Sometimes we darshan words in Tanakh, even from other languages. Tap the Kaspishtein, pass the Afrikishtein, right? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so that's one answer. However, that's not the main one which we're getting into. Ravam, la'olam rakos mamash. Actually, no, the word rakos means literally your eyes were weak. However, this isn't said as a derogatory thing about Leah, that she didn't look good. Rather, fakev, it's meant to tell us a praiseworthy thing about her. What happened? Shahoysa shemasa parshas drachim. She would hear people talking at the crossroads. Bnei adam, shayoyimim. She would hear people who were saying, shnei bonim yesh lo l'rivka. Rivka had two sons, Yaakov and Esav. Shtei bonis yesh lo l'lavan. And Lavan had two daughters. And Marsha adds, they knew from Avraham's family that they liked to marry fairly close relatives. Like Avraham sent Eliezer to find someone from his family for Yitzchak. Therefore, G'dola l'gadol, k'tana l'katan. So b'pashtus, then the elder daughter is going to marry the elder son, and the younger daughter is going to marry the younger son. V'hoita yesheves ha'parshas d'rachim, so Leah herself would sit by those same crossroads, mashalas, and she'd ask the people, G'dol ma'amaisev, nu, I'm the oldest daughter, so I'm going to be married, so I'm basherta to the oldest son of Yitzchak and Rivka, nu, what is that oldest son like? And they would tell her Ishrahu, they'd tell her he's an evil man, Malachim Briyas, he robs people. Yeah. And she would ask Kotan Mamaisa, what about the younger son, what's he like? And they'd tell him Ishtam Yoshevalim, he's a perfect, a wholesome person who sits in tents and learns Torah. Behoisa boicha. So she started crying, Hayitoch, and then I'm gonna wind up marrying a Rosha like this Esav, Ad Shenoshu Risei Neho, until her eyelashes fell out. That's what it means by Ena Leia Rakas. That's why her eyes were weak or soft or whatever, because of all that crying. So that's not set as praiseworthy of her that she didn't want to be married to a Rosha like Esav. That's what it means.
Leia was worried about a woman. Ruffle didn't do that though, right? Ruffle knew based on what Leia was saying, did Leia talk to Ruffle?
I don't know if Leia talked to Ruffle. I mean, later on, eventually, yeah, there was that Rashi I mentioned before, that eventually Rachel started getting nervous that Yaakov's going to divorce me and I'm going to end up marrying Esav. To begin with, yeah, I guess she didn't have reason at the beginning to be worried about it. I don't know.
Actually,
by the way, Ben Yehoyada says an interesting verse over here. He says, why is she asking what the younger son is like? And if the younger son is good, okay, shouldn't she be happy for her sister? He says, at least she'll get to marry a tzaddik. He says an interesting thing. He says, Leah figured, fine, we know a lot of times a woman has a powerful influence in the household. Maybe I could maybe influence this Esav for good. But then they tell her his own brother is a good guy. And she thinks to herself, if even his brother couldn't have an effect on him all these years, then there's no hope that I'm going to read.
I think it's different for a wife. For
it's
husband,
true, but still, she mother, figured, mother. Still, but she figured, you know, that, yeah.
The plan was actually that the industry had designed for this, but it's not.
Apparently, but later she dabbed up at Akram. She dabbed so hard that maybe she changed his. There's the famous thing also, by the way, you know, where it says that that Yaakov locked up Dina in a box because he didn't want Esav to get a hold of her. And there that explains in Asicha, yeah, that Dina would have been the only one capable of turning Esav around, and therefore it was wrong of Yaakov. That's why she ended up being taken by Shechem, right? Yeah. Indeed.
Not she.
It's more that Yaakov was punished through her. Yaakov was punished through her, but yeah, because. Okay. Onward. Okay. V'hainu d'chziv, and thus, this is what it means. It says in the pasuk, V'yad Hashem ki snu Leah. Later, it says after Leah marries Yaakov, it says Hashem saw that Leah was hated. So again, you have to ask, my snua, what do you mean she was hated? Elema snua mamish, do you literally mean that Yaakov hated her? Again, Epshe begnus behemoth tmeah ledibra akosav. Again, the pasuk doesn't even tell us anything negative, a negative term about behemoth tmeah begnus tzaddikim dibra akosav. Is the Torah going to be telling us something derogatory about the tzaddikim? Either that Leah was an object of hate, which isn't a good thing about her, or that Yaakov hated her unjustifiedly, which is also not a good thing about him. Ella raw Kodesh Baruch Hu she snuing Ma'isa Esav b'paneh. No, what it means she snuah Leah means the Eibishter saw how much she hated Esav's ways and that she didn't want to be married to him, and therefore Vayiftach as Rachma, and therefore he opened her womb and made her fertile that she'll be able to have children, and then once she has children, of course Yaakov is going to stay married to her. Okay, So that's what we mean when we say that Leah kidamta Leah berachmin, that she got ahead of Rachel in the schos of her tefillah. That's what we mean that she got ahead, that she ended up marrying Yaakov first in the schos of that.
And that's what when
now. So that's why, in other words, so that's how it came about that Reuven is actually born first. Now we have to get to the other part of it. Why did the Bechorah end up going to Yosef? We're saying because of the tznius that Rachel had. So what's the tznius? So my tznius is above Rachel. What was Rachel's special thing of tznius? This is like this. We have to go a little bit earlier in the story. We have when Yaakov shows up at Laban's house. It says Yaakov informed Rachel that he is her father's brother and that he's the son of Rivka. Now, what do you mean? He's not her father's brother. He's her father's nephew. He's her cousin. Rivka is the sister of Laban, and he's Rivka's son. So what do you mean? I'm the brother of your father. It's like this. There was a whole conversation. Amalah, Yaakov says to Rachel, Minsvasli, would you be willing to marry me? Amalah Ain, she says, sure. Mihu, however, Abaramahu, you should know my father is a cheater, a swindler. Well, Yaakovle, and you're not gonna be able to. She had to inform him what he's getting himself into. No, but you know what they say when you marry somebody, you marry their family. You never heard of that expression, but anyway, the point is, v'lo yachos lei. You're not going to be able to manage with him. He's gonna trick you. He's gonna substitute Leah for me, and then you're not gonna realize.
Is that what she said, or she just kind of like hinted that was what's gonna happen?
Well, the Gemara, it could be. I mean, again, the pasuk doesn't tell us the entire conversation. The Gemara may be expanding and telling us, you know, she may not have said these exact words, but the substance of it, that you should know, be aware of what you're getting. You're not going to marry. Yeah.
Just be prepared.
Yeah. Amalah, so he says, my Rama will say, why, how does he plan to trick me? Amalah, she says, Ifli achosid shishamina, I have an older sister, v'limikama, and he's not going to marry me off before her.
So she knew about
it. Yeah. Amalah, so Yaakov tells him, don't worry. Achivani Bramos, when he says, Achi Aviyahu, I am your father's brother, meaning his equal, when it comes to Ramos, when it comes to the ability to be able to cheat. Meaning, in other words, that I'm not a pushover. I will know how to. The point is, in other words, if your father tries to trick me, I'll do proportionate response. I will game theory, you know, to, you know, you
tit for tat.
Yeah, tit for tat. Game theory, you know, if he treats me honestly, I'm chosid discussed, as he says. Okay, omrelay. So she asked him, "Mishardelahu l'tzadiki l'saguri b'ramosa? Are tzadikim allowed to act in a dishonest way?" He says, ain't. As the pasuk says, im novar titovar, with the clear, honest person, you act honestly. The im ikesh, with the crooked person, titapol, you should act deceitfully. So in other words, yes, if he's going to try to trick me, yes, the pasuk can kill him. Also in Shmuel Beis. So, yeah. It says, David Shira, by David David Lashem, it's David Ashira Azaz, yeah. After the meaning is, in other words, that in context, it's talking about how the Eibishter acts with people. The person acts straight, the Eibishter acts straight with him. But it applies to Tzaddikim as well. That's what he's saying. That's the Tzaddikim doim in Laboram, right?
The Gemara says.
The Gemara is saying, yeah.
No, the Gemara doesn't say it applies to Tzaddikim.
But we're saying, yeah. The Gemara is explaining that the Pasuk means that a Tzaddik is entitled to act in that way. Not more. You don't do more than you need to, but you do exactly as much as you need to show the Ramai that you're going to be able to, that you're wise to him, and you're going to be able to deal with him. Yeah. Like actually, we learned earlier. You know, we had the thing over there where Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai says, "Oylim oymar, oylim loy oymar." You know, woe to me if I tell about these various sharp kinds of practices that merchants try to do, because then people might learn from them. Oylim loy oymar. If I don't say, then I'm also in trouble, because then they're going to think that the Chachamim aren't wise to what we're doing. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So we see that, yeah, the tzaddikim are expected to know what the cheaters are out there doing, and to take steps against it means, yeah. So masala simon. So what Yaakov does is he gives her simonim. He gives her secret passwords that night when they get married, she should be able to tell him the passwords, and if not, then it means that it's not her life. Well, eventually, when it came to the wedding, and they brought in Leah, Savra, so Rachel realized to herself, now my sister is going to be embarrassed. He's going to ask her for the passwords, and she's not going to know them, and that's the end of that. Masatinu Nihalot. So she gave them over to her sister. That's the special tznius that she had, the ability to be able to put herself to the side, to be able to give the secret over to her sister. That's the tznius, that's the special tznius that Rachel had.
Did Yaakov allow her to do it?
Allow her? Behind her decision, but that's what...
He definitely didn't come to that agreement.
But
even if she did, she had a lot of opponents. That was her, like,
yes.
Did you know,
it was, yes.
She had a contract with him.
It's
a breach of contract.
But it's also like this, it would be embarrassing somebody, which that's like Shvich of Damim, so, yeah.
And I'm sure that if hypothetically they had the discussion after this happened, then Yaakov probably...
But be that as it may, whatever.
Especially that it was discussed prior.
Nevertheless, though, yeah. But actually, by the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that trait. It was for a good purpose. It was to prevent her sister from getting embarrassed. By the way, the Gemara points out in Megillah that this kind of ability of tznius, this lasted throughout Rachel's descendants also. We find later on that Shaul, when he was anointed king, he didn't immediately tell everybody. He kept it a secret until it was the appropriate time. We find that Esther, who's later on a descendant of Shaul, kept her nationality a secret for all those years when she's in Ahasuerus's palace. So they had the ability to keep a secret.
Could you say also it was intended to preserve the father's honor?
She said to begin with that my father was a rabbi.
Right, but that's one thing. But
no, so then... She
degraded him in public by...
She
didn't mind.
I don't think that factored into it. All right. Okay, anyway. Behinu dechtiv, and this is what it means that it says in the pasuk. Vayhi baboker v'hinehi leya. The pasuk says, and it was in the morning, and behold, she was leya. Mikal dat hashda lav leyahi. What does that imply? Up until now, it wasn't leya. Ela mitoch shimon simonim shemasal Yaakov Rachel, because of these simonim that Yaakov gave Rachel, or masau to leya, which she in turn went and gave over to leya. Lo habayada la that he shaita. He didn't know that it was leya until the next morning. By the way, I once saw a very interesting explanation about another nuance. I don't remember where it's from. Another nuance of this news that we're saying of Rachel. What were these passwords anyway? One of the many explanations is that they were actually the dinim that a Jewish woman has to keep when she's married. Nidachala and Adlokas Aner. In other words, that Yaakov told these concepts to Rachel, and then she would have to repeat them to him at night over there. So what happened? Rachel, again, like the Gemara is saying over here, realizes that Leah is going to be in trouble. So what does she do? She doesn't go and tell Leah explicitly, you should know these are the passwords Yaakov told me and you're going to be expected to say them. She goes over and tells her, you know what, look, Leah, you're going to be getting married. You need to know what a Jewish woman knows to get married. I'm going to teach you these dinim, nidachala and bakataneh. Leah herself, in other words, according to this explanation, doesn't even realize that Rachel is doing it as to keep her from getting embarrassed. That's the sneers that Rachel had then, according to that explanation, is that that double sneers, in other words, that she
averaged to the next program.
In general, people were careful often to keep themselves Tahor regardless. So even if, we know they always kept the Torah before it was given. And,
right. That's
you know. Okay. So. Yeah, I guess so. But yeah.
Well, hold on. How long did she wait? Until she's clean.
Minat Torah. All you need is to go to the mikveh, and that's it. Midrabanan, you have the whole concept of dam chimud and all, but that's
right.
That's midrabanan.
So that's
yeah. Okay. Anyway,
yeah,
Minatara, all you need is a nidra goes to the mikveh at the end of the 7 days, and that's that. So, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so that's the point of the tznius that Rachel had, which got her the schus, therefore that the bechora returned to her descendants. That's the point that we were getting at. Okay. Since we're talking about Yaakov's family, so now we're going to talk about another thing about his family. Bamine Abba Khalifa Kiruya Merabchia Ba'ab. Abba Khalifa Kiruya, apparently that's the name of the city he came from, asked Rabbi Chia Ba'aba, when it comes to the Yidden coming down to Mitzrayim, Bichlola Natamoita Shivim, the general total at the end of a listing over there, it says there were 70, Biprata Natamoita Shivim Chosar Echad. And when you count them specifically, you find only 69 names. And actually, the Rashbam points out, the actual discrepancy is in the descendants of Leah. Because at the end of Leah's listing, it says there were 33. And if you count the names, there are only 32. Who's the missing one? Amalei, sort of chiba abba and sisim to oima hoise in Dina. Dina had a twin sister. Dichtiv eis Dina bita. It says and eis his daughter Dina. Eis is always an addition, so therefore it means there was a twin.
Didn't they all have like the oldest ones in the hand, the boys have the girth?
Yeah, there is such an opinion, but then Rashi mentions it in the Pasuk, but he says according to that explanation, you would have to say that all of them died before they came down to Mitzrayim. However, the question is, by that logic, you should say Binyamin had a twin. Because we have a Pasuk earlier that says, V'es Binyamin Achiv Ben Imoy. And the point is, one of the Mephoshim says, I think maybe Marasha actually says, that if the Pasuk is trying to imply that Binyamin had a twin, fine, why does it mention only by him? If all the Shvatim had twins, there's no reason to specify only by Binyamin and Dina.
Okay.
So it can't be. So it can't be that that's the answer.
Shouldn't that actually count the women?
Well, it mentioned Sarah, but they were mentioned Dina. Yeah. So, yeah.
Or did it, like, skip out on like, certain children that they had? Or just...
No, it lists all the ones that they had. So that's the thing. Rashi mentions over there, according to the opinion, there's two different opinions who the Shvatim married. One is that they married their each other's sisters, each other's twin sisters. So according to that, Rashi says that those sisters should have been counted. They're all descendants of Yaakov as well. You have to say maybe that all of them died before they came down to Mitzrayim. Or according to the opinion, if they married women from other nations or whatever, then they're not listed because they're not descendants of Yaakov.
So they married people from other nations.
Yeah, according to one opinion. What?
Okay. Jews, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. The point is, you have one descended from Yaakov.
But that's the case. I mean, Yaakov obviously didn't want his children married from different nations, exactly.
We find that by Avraham and Yitzchak, because Yitzchak and Yaakov, the whole Jewish people, are descended from them. It's less of an issue when it comes to the Shvatim. And with that said, it's true. Now, you have the Gemara in Pesachim mentions when it says that Yehuda married Bat Ish Knani. The Gemara in Pesachim mentions that it explains that Knani doesn't literally mean a person from the nation of Knan, rather it means a merchant from some other nation. So fine, they didn't have to specifically be from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov's family. They actually shouldn't be from the seven nations of Knan, but they could be from any of the other 63 nations in the world.
So Shiva Nefesh could mean non-Yidden.
No. You're misunderstanding. Shivan Nefesh means all the people descended from Yaakov, who came down to Mitzrayim. So if you say the Shvatim had twin sisters and they each married each other's sisters, then why are they not listed? Because they must have died by that time. If you say the Shvatim married women from other nations, why are they not listed? Because they're not descendants of Yaakov. Yeah, not their own sisters, but sisters from each other's from different mothers with the same father. Yes, before Matan Torah, such a thing. No, because it's still the same way as Sarah is listed separately, and the same way as Dina is listed separately, the same way
about the whole idea of, each shaykh marries their twin sister, but then they're considered Ishalim.
Nah, but still,
good try.
Okay. All right, onward. Omar, Sarah of Chiba Abba says, my goal is Tova Hoysa Biyadi. Look at this. I had a beautiful pearl, a beautiful diamond in my hand, and you're trying to make me lose it. Now, meaning, in other words, that's not the real reason. That's not the real explanation that Dina had a twin. The real explanation is what I'm going to tell you now. Why is he calling it that you're trying to make me lose it? Rashbam explains that he's just saying this to make this all the more precious to him. Like, you should realize what an important view explanation this is, that I didn't just want to say it stammered. What is it? Hachi Amar of Chamabachanina, Zu Yecheved, this 70th one is Yecheved, Shahirosa Baderach, Veledasa Ben Achleves. She was conceived on the way, and she was born between the walls as they're coming into Mitzrayim. Shenema, as the apostle says, Asher Yolda Oitzel Levi in Mitzrayim, as it says, that she was born to Levi in Mitzrayim, implying, Leidasa Ben Mitzrayim, Ben Herosa Ben Mitzrayim. She was born in Mitzrayim, but not conceived in Mitzrayim. So she's not listed by name, because she wasn't born when they were coming into Mitzrayim. But by the time they came in, she was born. By the way, it connects with this week's parasha. Rashi mentions on today's Chumash, that today's Shir Chumash, that when the Eved tells Moshe to count the Levium from 1 month and up, Rashi mentions that the Levium throughout history we find are often counted from a very young age. Yecheved is counted towards the 70 as soon as she's born. The Levium are counted as Shomer Mishmeres HaKodesh as soon as they're a month old.
Did you hear anything about Ben Achimus? Why do we use that expression to say that we're coming into Mitzrayim?
One possibility is it may have had multiple walls. Cities in those days sometimes had multiple walls for fortifications.
Right, that's what I'm thinking, because they didn't have walls where they were coming to America, so they didn't have walls.
No, they
come into Mitzrayim, there's a lot of walls.
Yes, yeah. By the way, the Medrash mentions another example where a Levi is counted before they're even born. In Sefer Ezra, and repeated in the part that we call nowadays Nehemiah, it mentions the leaders of the Jewish people who led the people who come to build the second Beis Mikdash. One of the people mentioned, they're among the list over there, there's a name Mispar Bigvai. So the simple meaning is that's just the names of people, a person named Mispar and a person named Bigvai. But the Medrash mentions that Mispar Bigvai can also mean counted inside, Bigvai Meloshim Milagav, inside. This is a person who, his mother was pregnant with him when they came to Israel. Eventually, when he grew up, he became one of the leaders of the Jewish people. But now he's counted as one of the leaders even while he's still in the womb. Mispar Bigvai. And they have another example of...
That's just because he's pregnant.
Because he was a Levi, and therefore, so the Medrash gives that as another example of this kind of thing where we see the Levium are counted from very in the womb or at very young ages. Yeah. Okay. I'll continue tomorrow, Beth.
Oh, wow. Great. All right.